Hello.
Hello, this is me again. We're going to go on the air pretty soon. Am I holding
Okay.
again a little bit?
Yep,
Thank
I'll hang in there.
you. Thank
This 650-page hands-on course makes you the expert and will help you get your ideal body. There are no additional courses or special products to buy. Learn 14 ways that show you why it is toxins in the food we eat rather than calories that are making us fat. Learn many fat loss secrets that you won't find in any standard weight loss plan. How many weight loss foods that we are told will make us thin are in fact causing obesity? Well, she gives you an extensive shopping list to make this program easy, including 45 recipes to make it easy to get on with your new lifestyle. Contain revolutionary and unique ways of belly fat loss and getting slim, some of which have nothing to do with food or exercise. Fight the food mafia, fight the drug mafia, and don't be defrauded by the $68 billion a year diet mafia. If you're a loved one is a victim of obesity, get angry, get determined, and get your not fat, your toxic available at Amazon and book retailers everywhere.
Come on. Welcome back to the Talk with Vince show. Do I sound like Vince? No, Vince has stepped out of the room, so I'm in the driver's seat for a little bit. We've got John Dresch on, and he's talking to us about taking back. Do we have John on the line first?
I'm here.
Okay, good. Yeah, we're going to talk about the common law grand juries, and it's all very fascinating. You know, John, I have a question because I don't want to say I'm ignorant, but when I went through high school, I was a period in my life where life was a little bumpy, and I was hanging out with the wrong crowd, and I just didn't go to class. I ditched all the time, and I'm sure I'm not the only one out there that has done that. I do believe that I have some intuitive smartness, but a lot of this book smartness, it goes right over my head. So, I don't feel bad that I don't know, but I might be a good candidate for understanding what you're bringing to the table today. And so because of my lack of knowledge about the court system, the things that I do know is I've been called to jury duty, we're talking about grand juries, but there's different levels of juries. Is that correct?
Well, there's two different juries. There's the trial jury and there's the grand jury. They actually are one jury. One is operating outside of the courtroom. The other one is operating inside the courtroom. And when a jury is impaneled, then court is open. Court is in session. Any court that doesn't have a jury is no court at all. They're not a court of record. They're an administrative system and not a common law system. But I'd like to just make a point on education. The least amount of formal education an individual has, the better they are, because today's formal education, and this is probably true when I was a kid too, to a large degree, but more so today. Really, it's indoctrination. It's not education. They're not interested in education. You know, if you saw, when we go out and give presentations, we always bring a copy of a test, an eighth grade test from 1895, and we hand it out. And I haven't met anyone who could pass that test. That's how different education was today as it was yesterday. And in 8 years, they will be beyond our college level. So we can accomplish the same thing today. Our children can go to school and get a real education. It's called a classical education. Really teaches people how to think, and it gives them the fundamental and the foundations of life. And those things are interested to anybody who's a human being. When you get into these things, like for instance law has nothing to do with statutes and what you learn through bar schools. Law has to do with nature, natural law, rights, your unalienable rights. That's the foundation of law. And so it becomes fascinating and interesting, really, and it's very logical. It's all really common sense, and it's built upon principles. So if you have principles and you have common sense, that's all you need.
Now, one time when I was called into jury duty, and I know that I was being called into a trial jury?
A puppet grand jury that's trial, okay. Probably, yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's a trial jury. That's called a petite jury. It's a jury of 12.
Right. And I remember I go in, and the prosecuting and the defense attorney are there picking their jury for the trial.
Right.
And I'm listening to, you know, why the person is there, what they did, all that sort of thing. And then, of course, that came to the question and answer session with, you know, if anybody feels, well, first of all, what do they say? If somebody feels like they cannot be part of the jury, you know, speak now, and then they will be dismissed. Well, they said this one phrase that still to this day I have a real hard time with, and that was something about, would I be able to come up with a verdict beyond a reasonable doubt? And I said to the judge, I mean, I was just honest. I wasn't faking it or anything. I said, what do you mean by a reasonable doubt? Because if I have a doubt about the information that is being presented to me, if I have a feeling, and it's usually a feeling or an intuitive thing for me, despite the you know, mumbo jumbo that they're showing me, there's a feeling thing that takes place, which I think is something we're all getting back to, is our feelings. But they dismissed me because mm-hmm. I said that. Because mm-hmm. apparently I wouldn't be able to do that because I even questioned that. A reasonable
right.
doubt. If I had a doubt about if I felt that person really was getting a raw deal, that's a doubt. But I couldn't go beyond that.
Right.
And
well, one of the problems is that when they choose a jury, they filter them through a psychological test, really. And they ask you a lot of questions, and then they try to discover whether they even want you to sit on that jury. And that's just the government themselves. That this is created to begin with to filter out a lot of people. Once you pass through that filter, the next filter is they put you do you sit down and you're asked questions by both sides. You know, if it is the state against an individual, I haven't really looked too much into this part, but I would think that logically, you know, of course, the person who was on trial has the right to reject or accept the jurist because they're looking for a jurist of their peers and they want to make sure that's the case. I don't know if the other side should have the opportunity. I'll have to look into history to see what's there and listen to some arguments and try to come up with a conclusion on that one, whether the other side should have the right to even ask any questions. But the bottom line, you know, when we choose juries, it'll be a lottery, just like the way it's supposed to be. We don't have a litmus test. We'll put together a four-hour orientation, which gives them the mindset, the proper tools to be able to be a good jurist. And anyone can be a good jurist as soon as they understand the principles that they have to act upon. And we hold each other to it as we go through this process. You have 25 people in a room, or you have 12 people in a room. We're holding each other accountable. Hey, don't forget, we have to keep this in mind. We have to be honorable. We have to, and we have to consider mercy in every step of the way. You know, we have to look at all these things. And then you'll have a good jury. You don't have to be individuals with great knowledge. But, of course, we all should be people of knowledge. And, even Jefferson, you know, you had made a quote, I think, just a short while ago, and Thomas Jefferson said, educate and inform the whole masses of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. So we have to have people who are educated and understand this. And that's where the people who are going to administer to the grand jury, they administrate it and they administer to them. They're there to answer the questions that they might have as they're doing their duty in order to discover what should be done with a particular dilemma that they're looking at, you know. So the way we, the people, will run these juries will be quite different than the way they run these juries. And we're definitely not going to go through a filtration to filter out certain kinds of people. But I think the person who is going to be judged, I think they should have the opportunity to make sure that these people are their peerage.
Right.
So, but...
But explain the duty of common law grand juries.
It's a very simple duty. Fix all wrongdoing. You see a wrongdoing, you have a duty to fix it. So you can't ignore it. So if you see, you think of any problem you can think of, and if it's a wrongdoing, wow, you got a duty to figure out how to fix that wrongdoing. And that opens up all kinds of doors. That's true control. Because as long as there's no wrongdoing, then things are running great, then, hey, there's nothing to be fixed. Let's keep going, you know? And that's true in both the judicial and the political realm. And it's also true among the people. You know, people have gripes against other people. Now, they have civil court. They have a civil court, which is a common law court, though, by the way, not a statutory court. All courts need to run under common law. And, you know, you can have administrative courts, you know, you can have courts that operate under statutes, you know, rules that they govern, if you agree to it. You know, and there are cases where people will want to set things up then, agree to certain terms. You know, when you make a contract, you agree to a contract, and you're governed by the contract. You haven't given up your unalienable rights, but you have given up certain things. I promise to do this, and you promise to do that, and we both got to fulfill the promises we exchanged. And if it's written in a contract, you have something that governs you above and beyond your unalienable rights. So you've given up some rights. I'm going to give you money, and you're going to do some work, or whatever the case may be.
Right. And what's the difference between common law and regular law?
Well, in courts, we're in courts of equity. That's what they have. They're settling a money matter all the time. That's always what's going on in the courts. They're courts of equity. But that's not what we have. Common law is looking for justice. It's the whole word, the whole fact of common law is built upon that word, justice. And justice, as I mentioned, the legal interpretation of justice is that which is synonymous with virtue.
John,
and so
it's
godly things.
Can you give us a couple examples, like, you know, one scenario versus another scenario?
In which sense?
You mean in common law versus?
Oh, well,
right,
here
right.
It is very simple. Look, they operate under a corporate charter. It's they settle something for the corporation, not for the people. So they're acting under statutes. They're guided by statutes. You know, it took me a while to pick up on this, and when the judge would say, well, I have no statute to work upon, and it just didn't hit me in the brain right that I what he was saying. I've brought the court to perplexities from time to time, and I realize now when they become perplexed and they don't know what to do and they're silent, it's because they don't have a rule, a policy, a procedure, or something to act upon. And they're trained in law school. Judges are trained, of course, in law school. They're first lawyers first. So they're approved by the Bar Association to become a lawyer. And in order to become a judge, you have to be approved by the Bar Association again to become the judge. So they get all the right criminals in place there. But the bottom line is they act upon legislature. They act upon rules, regulations. And they cannot act out. They can't think beyond that. They're not thinkers. They don't think beyond that. They don't look to, for instance, United States Supreme Court rulings. They don't see it the way we see it, and they don't even bring it up in court. And when you bring it up in court, they get frustrated and upset because you're bringing these things into court that they don't want to talk about, and because they ignore those things. They'll use Supreme Court cases, you know, on the appellate levels, whether it's the United States or within the state. They'll use it just to kind of shore up their case, but they will not use it to conclude their case. They operate under statutes, and it is clear when you go into common law and you read the makeup, particularly of the King's Bench, it talks about the difference between statutory law and common law, and statutory law has no business, no part with common law at all. That's where the legislators try to prefigure all the possible things that could go on in a court, and they create all these statutes. So if this happens, you utilize that rule. If that statute happens, you utilize this rule. And therefore, you can only come up with injustice. And it's one part fits all. You know, if someone is guilty of a certain situation, then they put forth it's 10 years in prison, and that's it. You know, there's no extenuating circumstances that could be considered. There's no mercy that can be considered. And that's not what common law is all about. So common law is about as much as about mercy as it is about justice. And it's about the human factor. It's about looking into extenuating circumstances. You know, a jury can come together and say, this guy's guilty of sin. But you know what? If I was in that condition, I would have done the same thing. There is no
right.
You see, they have extenuating circuit. They have the ability to make a true, righteous, just decision and not be governed by a robotic requirement of everyone going to jail. We have a lot of people in jail that literally are in jail because they stole a piece of cake or a piece of bread, and they're in jail for a long term. Why? Because they're three-time losers. That's not righteous. And first of all, the other two things before them, it may not even have been really law-breaking to begin with.
Yeah, you guys were listening to John Duresh on the Talk with Vince show. And one of the things that I want to say that I want to point out that you said, when you talk about statues, here in Nevada, that's what they call it, Nevada Revised Statues. And I know many of times I've seen documents where they've listed the state as the victim, and the state cannot be the victim of a crime. And they use that a lot of times. You know, states are starting now to reverse the marijuana laws, but I've seen many of people convicted of, you know, being in possession of marijuana where they listed the state as the victim, and the state cannot be a victim.
Correct. And that's a problem everywhere. You know, the bottom line is this, and people, this is a mature conclusion you have to come upon. If we're under control, mind control, you know, as soon as you say certain things, we have a certain attitude about them. We have to stop that attitude. When you hear certain things, you got to consider it and look at the case and reconsider an attitude that you might automatically respond with. You know, I am, just take drugs, okay? Drugs should be illegal. The people should be able to use, if they want to use drugs, that's their business. You know, if the guy next door wants to stick a needle in his arm, there's nothing I could do about it. I can talk with them, I can reason with them, and I can call the ambulance when they overdose, and then I can try to help them again after that. But there's nothing more you can do. Some people are self-destructive. But by trying to prevent that person, and really they're really creating these statutes for another reason. They just make the excuse that they're trying to protect that one person. They violate everyone's rights. You know, but drugs should be controlled just like liquor and, you know, any kind of alcohol or anything else. It shouldn't be done in public because, you know, you could be corrupting the morals of a minor. You know, so there are a lot of good rules you can apply towards a court case should they violate that kind of a thing. But the bottom line is that if we legalize drugs, crime rates would probably reduce by at least 80%, at least, quickly. You wouldn't have drug problems in schools. Our children wouldn't have drug problems. As long as we brought back the schools to the people, we'd be teaching what the people want. Whatever the morals of the community are, that's what they'd be teaching in their schools. And when one school looks at another town, the school over there, and saying, hey, their children is far exceeding ours, I wonder why, and they look into it and they make changes in their own school. You see, schools have to be controlled from the grassroots, the people who are sending their children there. And if it's a Christian community, they might want to put the Bible as the center. If they're a Jewish community, they might want to put the Bible to the center of it also. But, you know, people get to decide what it is. And if you're in one community and you can't find agreement there, you have the opportunity to move to another community. Or you can go voice your opinions in these places and try to change things. But the bottom line is that just by making things legal that should be legal, you don't need a license to drive. You don't need a permission from the government to carry a weapon. You don't need you should be able to get drugs if that's what you want to do. I don't do drugs. I think drugs are bad. I think it's going to hurt you. I've taught my children. They don't go near the stuff. But you know what? The whole attitude about drugs will change, and people will be shunned by using drugs, and that'll control it more, and you won't have all these problems. Judge Bork, those of us.
But you know what, John? There's too much money in keeping it illegal.
That's
true.
Drugs
were legal up until, I want to say the 1920s or so. I remember cocaine was legal.
Marijuana and heroin were legal. Sold over the counter about over 110 years ago. My grandmother lived 101. And during her 100th birthday party, we read some stuff about how life was 100 years ago. And that was one of the things that we had listed on the things about how life was 100 years ago. They actually said heroin was good for your complexion, but it was legal.
Right.
A little over 100 years ago.
And we didn't have the problems we have today. Drug problems is a disease, and it's just growing, and it's getting worse. And all our children are exposed to it, and a lot of them succumb to it, and so on. You know, but we can correct all that with jury nullification. First of all, juries will refuse to indict. Once we talk with the prosecutor, let them know we're not going to hearing these cases because unless there's a victim, don't bring them to us. That in itself is going to change the whole thing. And, you know, how do we straighten up the mess? We have a all the problems in our country, if you try to approach each one of them individually, you'll be there forever and you'll never get it done, and we'll be taken over long before you even get anywheres with that. But by fixing the foundation, by bringing justice back into the courts, you repair everything from the bottom up, and it's done automatically. Let's take an agency, and most agencies are illegal, they're unconstitutional, and once an agency is unconstitutional, it has to be done away with. It's a wrongdoing. You can't have it. And so, you know, you approach the assembly in your state and the Senate in your state, and you tell them to fix it. You got to get rid of the agency or find a way to make it constitutional where it fits in. And if they can't, they get rid of the agency. And every law and every act and every statute written under that agency falls away. And so as you chip away at the agencies, and you could do that quite quickly, you'll start pulling away all these crazy laws. And, of course, if you make drugs legal, in other words, you start selling them in a drugstore or a liquor store or something like that, and require them to be of an age, 18 or whatever the case may be, once you do that, then all these laws and things that are connected just fall away. They become nothing. And if they're ever brought before the jury, an educated jury, an enlightened jury, as Jefferson put it, you know, then they're going to be jury nullification. They're not going to hear the case, and it'll be thrown out. So
yeah.
We could fix it very quickly, but we have to take control of the grassroots in the courts.
John, talk to us about the U.S. versus Williams, Antonin Scalia written opinion.
Well, pretty much everything I'm speaking about really stems from what he had to say in that particular case. And ultimately, the bottom line is the jury is the final answer. He made the point that whatever the jury decision of the jury, whether it be grand or petite, make, they can't even second guess it. They have to obey it as much as anyone else has to obey it, unless it is violating someone else's unalienable rights. You see, other than that, they can't say anything. They got to obey it, period. They made the point that they govern themselves. They come up, and that's what we're doing right now, is we want to get to the point where we govern ourselves. We, the people, want to orient the people into the system. We want to make sure that people aren't screened out, that people come in just through the lottery, that you just bring them in by lottery, and you bring them in, and they don't have to come in. You can't force a person to be a jurist that they don't want to be. You know, we need to educate the people, let them know this is your duty. You should want to become a jurist, and if you can make it, you make it. We also want to remove the burdens. We don't want people on too long. There's grand juries that have served as long as 9 months, because when they get a really good rubber stamp jury, they don't want to get rid of it, and they'll hold on to it forever. And, you know, a grand jury probably should come together for a week and then be dismissed. Now, it may be a week over a month, you know, a day here or a day there, until they hear the entire series of cases that they're hearing. But it shouldn't be any more than 5 or 7 days, I'd imagine. There may be certain cases we know it's going to go longer, and you can inform the people, and they have the opportunity to say, well, I can't take that much off. Also, juries... Huh?
Yes.
Juries are also they're paid $30 a day to cover their expenses. I think that's got to be looked into. If you got people that can't take a week off from work or because the things are that tight, then you shouldn't require. You know, they want to do their duty. You should be able to pay these people whatever it is that they're getting paid. That's got to be reviewed and looked at also.
Something that you mentioned there. Not only do they pay them only $30 a day, but if you don't show up when you're summoned from jury duty, they will issue a warrant for your arrest. They issued a warrant for my arrest, and I was in the military at the time, stationed overseas. So my mom had to take a copy of my orders to the court to show them that I was out of the country and could not report for jury duty, because they will issue a warrant for your arrest if you don't show up.
Well, again, they're forcing you into obeying them, and they can't do that. Well, they do that, because, you see, you got to remember, when they're pulling you into the jury duty, you're pulling into a corporate situation, not a constitutional. And the corporation decides what they're going to do. We have to understand this, and you know, people must realize, when you drive down a road and you see it, you go into a town incorporated back in, that should really alarm us. to know that these towns are incorporated, and you find out that your state is incorporated, your county is incorporated, the United States is incorporated. Well, that means someone owns it to begin with, you know. But the bottom line is that they're under corporate power, corporate authority, not constitutional. They don't concern themselves about your rights. And unless you understand that, you can't make a good argument in court and you'll never win. And unless you put the judge's flesh on the line, in other words, you threaten him in a way that he understands that I'm going to put you in jail or you're going to have to pay for the damages done here if you don't do the right thing. Unless you do that and you're able to do that and you understand how to do that, you don't have to even stand a chance in court. Now, you can go to court and win, of course, because a lot of cases they don't care about one way or the other, but the other line is these lawyers that are coming in on the other side, these judges know them, and there's a deal. There's a wink, you know, and a nod and a handshake. That's right. It's nothing. It's all about money.
John, let me ask you a question, because there's something that you just said that's very important. And you said the United States was a corporation. Is that the reason why they address us as citizens and not as a person?
Well, that's a good point, but we got to be careful with that because, you know, even in the Constitution, it refers to the citizen, and being a citizen is not necessarily a bad thing when we look at its history, but they have robbed the words. And so if I go into a court, the last thing I will call myself is a citizen. I refer to myself as one of the people. I do not say State of New York on the top. I do New York. And I don't do my county. I do, you know, I don't do county of. I just do my county, you know, Dutchess County. And I don't say I reside anywhere. I'm domiciled. Now, all of those words have a different meaning than what we're ignoring to use in a court. And it's unfortunate we have to do that. But in reality, it's okay to use those words. And when you get into a common law court, you'll be able to use those words because all of that is fraud. They've robbed the meanings of words and changed them, and they've given them meanings in legal terms, and therefore they're able to bring you into their subjection.
Now, let me ask you, does the United States see us as employees of the corporation as opposed to being individual persons?
Well, they do see us as either an employee or an employer. One way or the other, ultimately. You know, what goes on, ultimately, is they're relating to everyone under the Alcohol and Tobacco Act, when you're talking particularly about the IRS. And if you read their paperwork, if you ever summons into that system, and you look at their paperwork and you look up the codes, you'll find they have nothing to do with you. But when you make your argument against them, they just ignore it. There are a few little secrets on how you can beat them. People have been racking their brains out, and there's a lot of things you can bring up, but they'll ignore it all because it all falls down to two things: fiduciary authority over you, and proof of a claim. And the court assumes those two things to be in place because usually they start off with the filing of a lien, and it's really that lien is not a lien; it's a notice of lien. But when they file it as a notice of lien, it's filed under a process called in rem, okay? And that's something people need to look into. What that means is in rem. And then they need to find out about this fiduciary authority they have over you and this claim, this proof of claim. And none of those things exist. And when you discover that and you bring that up in court, that's when they start to do a reversal.
Okay, John, let me ask you, through common law grand juries, what's possible?
We can reset the clock back to 1789, and we can have a country in the vision of George Washington. Politics would become a thing of the past. It wouldn't exist anymore. And the reason why that is, you see, politics is all about control, controlling behavior of the other side. And, of course, it's the enemy putting one side against the other, taking the conservatives against the liberals, and there's that big argument. So we're fighting to get legislators so that we can create legislation to control them, and the other side is fighting for legislation so that they can get the legislators, the right legislators, control the other side. And that's what it is, and that's politics. When that disappears, when that power disappears, the power to press the legislators to control the other side, then the whole process falls apart. And these are statutes, And this is the plan of the New World Order, brought forth by the minions, which are lawyers, the minions of the New World Order, to sow a web of deceit and control through statutes. And we're doing it to ourselves. They're sitting back and laughing at us, ultimately, and they look at us as cattle. They own us. They actually trade our bodies on the world market. Your birth certificate is traded on the world market, and each one of our certificates, I understand, is valued at about $425 million. And there's a whole other game going on out there that people would. It's unbelievable. It's.
I've heard that, and I know that there's a. It's almost unbelievable that if that is the truth, it just boggles the mind.
It is the truth. I will assure you.
I think there was somebody who actually tried to take get a loan out on that for themselves.
Well, there are people.
It actually went through.
There are people who have been able to work through the UCC process and all of that stuff and work out where they've figured out how they can pay their bills. And every time a bill comes in, they can apply it to that. Whenever a person goes to jail, you know, the court is paid off of that market. You know, it might be valued. If they send someone to jail for a year, the court might get $20,000 or $50,000 or $10,000. The municipality gets that money.
So that's why they keep people in prison.
Exactly. That's the profit. That has nothing to do with the cost of going to prison, okay? But it pays for that. And so that goes into the CAFA fund, which really is their retirement plan. And that's a whole other story that you wouldn't believe what's going on.
So it's like
just
a Russian pea egg. You open one up and there's another one inside and another
the
one.
The mafia has nothing on this system. Nothing. This is beyond anything you can imagine. It is the mafia on steroids.
Wow. Now what are the qualifications to serve on a common law grand jury?
Be one of the people. Period. You just look at what we call you up and you're asked to sit on the jury. We orientate you. You sign the paper in agreement to the principles and ruled by the two maxims, and you agree to that. You're on board. You disagree with that, we can't allow you, because that would be a wrongdoing, because you would be doing the person injury and not good if you don't agree to the principles that are set up by God. So it's that simple. It doesn't get any more complex. They don't have to agree to be a citizen or not agree to. Some people make a big thing about that. That citizen thing only really is a problem when you're in their corporate courts. When you're outside their corporate courts, we shouldn't even mess with it. You know, I have a driver's license. A lot of people will get rid of their driver's license. I have it so I don't have to go to jail to begin with. But, you know, I refuse tickets and I argue tickets. I look at the driver's license two things. Number one, it's a great form of identification. Everyone accepts it everywhere. So I can prove who I am with that. So that works well. The other thing is just in case I want to drive a commercial vehicle. And I do from time to time get involved in a commercial situation where I might want to drive a commercial vehicle. And if you're going to drive a commercial vehicle, you need a driver's license. That's what it's for.
Right. And what's the jurisdiction of the common law grand juries, and what are the jury rules?
Well, the rules get right back to the principles we mentioned. There are no rules because you make it up as you go and everyone decides. There's no leader. The foreman is just the guy there with the hammer to say, okay, let's move on to the next thing. We'll come back to that. Make sure everybody gets their opinion out, their thoughts, and keeps things flowing. That's their only power. They're a vote like anyone else, and they don't get to shut anyone up or anything like that. So there is no authority there. There's no rules. You just like be civil people. The rule is ultimately looking to fix wrongdoing. We're all being humble, trying to figure things out. And when you get someone out of line, let's just get rid of them. And you just vote them out, and they're gone, and you're back to peace in the room, and you get about the business of the people. So as long as people are willing to sign that paper, agreeing to the three principles they're going to act upon and the two maxims they're going to be governed by, then we're all good. And the moment someone sees that one of those people is going against those things, then they bring it up to the rest, and the rest will bring a correction, or they'll get rid of that person. So it's self-controlling. And you can't make a rule.
Now, let me ask you, earlier we were talking about the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
What is the duty of the sheriff in this system, and how do we educate sheriffs so that they will know what their duties are and their power to protect the people and serve.
Well, that's exactly it. They're to protect the unalienable rights of the people. That is their whole duty, period, in a nutshell, to protect the unalienable rights of the people of their county. And so their job, they're in a... They, too, are in the mode of thinking as a cop does. You know, immediately they come and they quiz you and you're interrogated. And that's not what a sheriff's supposed to do, and that's not what the law enforcement's supposed to do. They're not supposed to be interrogating you. Whenever you stop by an officer, it always goes through an interrogation process, and that's disrespectful. If they have a reason to be concerned and a good reason, they can go through that kind of a process. But a sheriff should be more friendly and more open to the people. The bottom line is this. All police forces are corporations, corporate police. They work for corporations. The town police works for the corporation of the town, the municipality, the city, the county, the state, even the state police. They all work for corporations. They're politically controlled. And the only free police force is the sheriff. And at some point, we need to get back to the sheriff controlling it all, because they're there to represent the people. And we got to get rid of the corporations, and therefore we wouldn't need corporate police no more. So whatever police force is necessary anywhere throughout the state, they can be absorbed by the sheriff's office, and they can just extend their numbers in that way. The state police is kind of necessary, but it's political. It needs to be brought under the control of the sheriff. And that has to be shared between, in my case here in New York, it's 62 counties, so there's 62 sheriffs, what they're supposed to be anyway. So they have to work that out, how they can work out the control of the state police. But it certainly can't continue as a political power, because here in New York, we have the big problem with the SAFE Act, that there's an argument going on, and they're trying to remove the control of the permits for guns to the state police, because the sheriffs refuse to take away the guns from the people. At least they've come out and claimed that. But the superintendent of state police, which is the highest form, the commissioner type thing, he's appointed directly by the governor of New York. He has already come out and stated that if the governor gave me an order to remove the guns from the people, I will send the officers out to do that.
But wait a second, doesn't that go against the Second Amendment?
Yeah, but they don't apply that to themselves. They're under corporate charter. They're out to destroy the Constitution. It's all about money, and they're the enemies of liberty. And yeah, that has to be fixed. And right now, they can make all these crazy statements, and nobody does anything about it. 30 years ago, they would have been arrested, maybe.
Yeah,
that's subversion. Subversion is subversion against the Constitution.
And that's what they're doing, and that's the duty of the sheriff.
That's right. But he doesn't know it. He's too ignorant.
He's too ignorant. And see, a lot of people don't know that the sheriff is not a part of the police department. There is the office of the sheriff, but he's actually not a commissioned officer.
No,
he has to resign from the department in order to run for sheriff. So he's actually a civilian, an elected official of the people, for the people, by the people.
Exactly. And so they're there to serve the people, and they're the only one with the power of deputizing the people. And we will let the sheriff know that, you know, if you need to deputize people, you can come to the grand jury, because we know a lot of people. And we'll send them on to the border, wherever you want us to go. We'll get the people together. And, of course, they can put the word out. The people will – I think a lot of the people, especially the hunters, will stand up. Because they're ready. They're all the gun rights people in here in New York, and most of us are, believe me, they're all ready. They're becoming conscious of the problem. And if any of them were to get a call like that from a sheriff, believe me, they'd all be right there, because they'd be just so happy that the sheriff is supporting them as the people.
That's why so many people support Sheriff, what's his name? All right, Poe down in Arizona.
There's a lot of them, but the Sheriff Mack is one of them out there. And
yeah, Sheriff Mack is another good one out there.
Yeah.
And the one in Arizona is my favorite. I can't remember. His name starts with
He makes all the prisoners wear pink or something like that?
Yeah, I love that guy.
Arapaho or something like that?
Yeah. Now, one of the things that you mentioned in a briefing on the website was you define a slave. Define for the audience what a slave is.
Well, a slave is anyone who obeys the statutes. If I'm called into a court, I'm not going to comply to anything that they have to say because they have no authority over me. And unless there's a jury in place, unless there's the common law procedures, a tribunal there, they have no authority over me. And so if you're arrested for anything, I mean, I haven't really been arrested for anything particularly, but you know, I get a ticket or something like that. They have no authority over me. They have no jurisdiction. I've given no consent, and they have to dismiss the case. Anybody who goes along with that is a slave because they don't know. Slaves are ignorant. They don't understand. They don't know how to read and write, so to speak. They don't know how to read and write legalese, I guess, or understand their rights, shall I say. So, you know, anybody who goes along is a slave to the system, and we're going deeper and deeper. You know, corporatism is Nazism. That's the legal term of Nazism is corporatism. We are in a corporate state. Everything is incorporated. We're in corporatism. We're very close to the losing of the republic here in the United States in every single state. And as long as we remain ignorant, we're going to go deeper and deeper into slavery until we have Nazi regimes so serious that they'll just take your life without a thought.
Yeah, and actually, you mentioned that. And one of the things, two things that you have on your website that I want to read because I want to quote Thomas Jefferson because I think it's very appropriate following up on what you just said. And that is, an enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all of its citizens. And if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be.
Amen to that. And that's what we all have to realize. And if education is painful, it's time to take on some pain. Because, and you know what? Ron Paul, when he was running for office, he made the point, freedom is popular, okay? And when people come in contact with true freedom, well, let's call that liberty, okay, when they come to understand liberty and realize what liberty is and understand the problems that are against liberty here in our courts, it becomes very interesting. It becomes you start to become compelled to learn more and more. It's exciting, ultimately.
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that you mentioned also is that there's three powers that will free us from tyrants. What are those three powers?
Well, spiritual power, you have to have your relationship with God, so we all have to enter into our, you know, prayer closets and figure that out with the Lord, and respond in what he defines as justice. So spiritual power is the first and foremost, and if you're doing the will of God, then he may bless you, and we believe he will, of course, and he may bless you with the power and the ability to be able to take the other two powers, which is political power and spiritual and judicial power. Political power is what decides our destiny, and judicial power decides whether we're going to live in harmony or distress. So if you don't have those three powers and working on them, then you're not going to have freedom, you're not going to have liberty, and you're going to have nothing but distress in your life. And so, you know, in our society, they have taught us that when you want to get a relationship with God, go find the church, get a pastor or somebody, a priest or something to work with that problem. So we never face it straight on. And the same thing, if you have a legal problem, go get yourself a lawyer. And if you have a political problem, join a party. So they've created a mindless flow when someone else is in control and not you. You have to take control. That's what liberty is all about. It's maturity, standing up for your own rights. You have unalienable rights. They're given to you by God, and you have to defend them. The Constitution is supposed to protect our rights, but the Constitution cannot protect itself. We, the people, have got to stand up. And so if people want to save this nation, it's time for them to stand up and be counted. They can go out to nationallibertyalliance.org, join forces with us, and start developing grand juries in their counties and work with the counties next door and the states next door, and we, the people, together can take back America. But I can assure you We're out of time. We do not have much time. It could be as little, in my opinion, as just a few more months. And when they pull that economic, you know, people don't understand how easy it is to take over a nation. We're set and ripe for the takeover. All they have to do is pull the monetary plug, drop the dollar and make it worthless, and this all of civilization falls apart. I mean, people won't be going to work. There'll be no food. There'll be riots in the streets, and they'll be all ripe and ready for the takeover through martial law. And it'll get so bad that the people that haven't been picked up yet, they'll be asking the people who created this situation to save them, and they'll be more than willing to do that.
Yeah, and they will, and it's called PSR. They create a problem, they elicit a reaction, and then they provide you with the solution.
Correct.
And one of the things, now, you just mentioned the fact that we have inalienable rights that come from God. So explain the term common law is natural law.
Well, absolutely. That's exactly what common law is. It's the common law of mankind, which is natural law, and natural law brings us back to principles. You know, God only has two laws, and all laws are are built upon those laws, and it's written in the hearts of men. And the two laws is, you know, to love God with all your heart and soul and to honor him. And the second is the same with your neighbor, to love your neighbor as for the love of God. And if you obey those two main rules and laws, ultimately all other laws fall upon them. You're not going to steal from your neighbor. You're not going to steal from God. You're not going to kill. You're not going to do any of those things. So all laws are built upon those two principles. God has made it really very easy for us. And everybody knows because it's written in the hearts of all men anyway. And so if we just take every aspect of our life, no matter what it is that comes before us, and deal with it in just making the right decision in every case, not what we want, but what we know is right, and we do that in every aspect of our life, we'll be walking in harmony with God and with those who are his children. And we can, you know, bring that out into our public lives as we go forward to bring back the grand jury and bring back the elected committeemen and bring these people back under control and make them do the right thing. And we will finally maybe reach the vision of our founding fathers, you know, peace and tranquility.
John, let me ask you. If I wanted to establish a common law grand jury in my community, how would I go about doing that?
Well, it's real simple. You know, you come out to the website, I would say read the front page thoroughly and watch the video, the first video particularly, which is the power of the grand jury. It gives you the vision of what we're doing. And then after that, you would join, click on register, and you'd be taken to a page, which you can get from the left side anyway, and ultimately it's jury orientation. And that's about a four-hour, page to go through. It's a lot of videos on it. And it kind of gives you a picture of what's going on. And then after that, there's education. We're building a new site, which hopefully will be up in a couple of weeks, and we'll be more specific of a point-by-point and how you can run through the education. But basically, on the Juris page is very important, the Juris document page, the common law page right now. Those are the pages to go to learn this stuff and to get deeper and deeper into the understanding. But the bottom line is once you get past those first 4 hours, you'll find at the bottom of the page how to start a grand jury in your county. And we have a 35-minute video clip and a zip download with all the paperwork necessary to form the grand jury. And we have Monday night meetings at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Monday night, you can go onto our website and click on the Monday night conference call, and you'll get the information. You can join us, ask questions there. But it boils down to one thing, the desire to do it. Find 3 hours to put into this, mostly on the phone, finding a place to do it and calling people to come to it, filling out the paperwork, and then it takes 35 minutes. We have 28, 29 minutes of video we show at the, we're calling it an election, and it's just an election to reinstate the common law grand jury in that county, and therefore it becomes constituted at that point. And then eventually filed. But all the paperwork is there. It's a fill in the blanks. We have a 35-minute video clip, detailed step by step of how to do the paperwork and how to go about with the 35-minute process of reinstating the grand jury. And like I said, it's about 28 minutes of of videos. It's three short videos, one in a row. You show that to the people. And then at the end, you say all those in favor of reinstating the common law grand jury here in the county of whatever. And it's been pretty much unanimous. If it's just major majority, that's fine. That's you write that instead.
Okay,
but,
John,
we've
got about 2 minutes left in the show.
Yes.
How do we get our common law grand jury's authority recognized?
Well, that's where we're at right now. That's the battle. We've reinstated a lot of grand juries over the past few months, and we're in the battle, and the battle is here in New York. You can read the battle from the beginning to present by clicking on the link, latest
National
news.
National Liberty Alliance. Let me just say, because the website is nationallibertyalliance.org. That's nationallibertyalliance.org.
And click on breaking news. And what we're doing is what other people should be doing. They'll follow that. When New York breaks it and makes it, the rest of the states are going to flow right in very quickly.
It'll be like a domino effect.
That's right. And states have the right to help other states. So that's been done in the past. We're looking into that now. And we will go out to help other states.
Yeah, John, I want to thank you for joining us today. You are a wealth of knowledge. And I want to direct people, like I say, please go up there and on nationallibertyalliance.org, because there's a wealth of information up there, and you've been special. And thank you for doing what you're doing and joining the fight, because somebody's got to stand up for us, and we all need to take a stand. And I contend that we're never going to fully get America to comply or stand up for themselves until the government cut off their checks and make it uncomfortable. That's when people will get up off the sofa.
Well, it's time to stand up now, because the motivation is loss of America in a few months, I believe, or at least in the next year. It's going to be gone. You won't have it. Your children won't have it. You got to step up, and you got to save it.
Thank you, sir. I want to thank you for being on
thank
the show.
Thank you, John.
And
thank
God
you.
Bless you for all that you're doing for us.
You too.
God
Godspeed. Bye.
Godspeed. Bye.